How long was the longest you grew your beard to? Can you show me with your hand? Oh my God, that's really long. Did you ever play Santa at a mall, a shopping mall?
I haven't gotten enough white hairs yet, maybe in about 10 years.
I think you can dye your beard. Is that possible? Can you dye your beard? Can people change their beard color with hair dye? Is that something people do?
Of course. And I've got videos on it. Or not me specifically, but some of our content creators have created content on our YouTube channel.
If I had a beard, I would play Santa. Like, that is the only thing I would do. Hey, everybody. I'm here with Eric Bandholz, founder and CEO of Beard Brand. Eric and his wife have been married for 17 years, and they have two kids under the age of 10. And he does this all while running a very successful business. So I thought I'd have him on my podcast to talk about something I've been thinking about a lot lately, which is masculinity. Everybody's been thinking about masculinity. It is all over my feed. People are telling people not to eat soy. They're talking about holding open doors for women and how women are becoming more masculine. So I just thought I'd have him on my show to talk about it. So welcome to my podcast, Eric.
What is going on?
So first things first, tell me your story. How did you get involved in beard care?
I founded Beard Brand way back in 2012. I used to be a financial advisor at a mega bank, and they have expectations for you to look and dress a certain way, which was not a way that I resonated with. So I quit working there. I grew out my beard and started some other kind of side projects at this time. During this, I was involved in the business community, going to a lot of events. People call me Duck Dynasty or ZZ Top or Grizzly Adams, and those are all cool guys, but these hands were actually made for keyboards. They weren't made for axes. I realized in growing my beard out that I didn't really fit the traditional stereotype of what a bearded guy was, and I wanted to change perception of facial hair. So Beard Brand was started to help men like me embark on their journey to grow their facial hair and really give them the confidence they needed to invest in themselves.
Working at a big corporation, and they were not down with you having a beard. What was that like? Did you get discriminated against? Did people tell you to shave your beard? Just tell me.
Yeah, I want to really consider it like discriminated against. I do think in a masculine environment, there is a lot of teasing and probing and joking. I didn't really try to grow my beard out because I knew it wasn't acceptable in that environment. Maybe I might have like something my current length, which is a couple weeks.
So I'm a little confused. Did you quit your job so you could have a beard? Was that the rationale? Because you said you just grew a really long beard, but it wasn't okay at the company you worked at.
Yeah, I would say I quit for a few different reasons. One, I didn't particularly enjoy the job. At the end of the day, I felt like I had to be someone who I wasn't. The big reason why I left working there.
So who is Eric? You know, you have a great business. You're a loving husband and a devoted father. What made you think, oh, I'm not fit for this?
Yeah, I mean, I think Eric Bandholz is generally the person you see online, a driven individual who tends to be a little more on the creative side than the execution side, who wants to leave the place a better place than when I entered.
Yeah, I would say those are qualities I don't think of when I think of corporate finance. Want to be authentic. Very interesting. What motivated you to start a beard care company? I mean, you were in corporate finance. You're like, this isn't for me. These people are nice, but it's just, actually, I don't think anyone says anyone in corporate finance is nice. Can you tell me what was the process of starting your company?
Yeah, so when I started Beard Brand, I was kind of at this point in my life where I didn't really have clear direction. I just knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I knew I wanted to work for myself. So this time in between working for the financial company and starting Beard Brand, it was a time of several failed projects. I had a nonprofit charity organization I was working on called Spokane Beard and Mustache. We would raise money for local charities. And I had Startup Spokane going on. I had my primary business, which was called Sovereignty. And then I had Beard Brand, which was also a side project. And Beard Brand was the one that I felt most connection with because it was almost an extension of myself. And I was able to do the things that I loved. I didn't like Sovereignty because I was trading my time for money. Beard Brand was a business that was going to sell products. The barriers to entry were really low. So the customers effectively told me they wanted it to be a beard care company. Rather than fight them, I listened to them and just started down the pathway towards men's grooming. Beard Brand tagline, keep on growing, is about why we're doing it, which is effectively like we make products that help the man love the man looking back at him in the mirror. So like that's our mission, is to improve confidence. And it's through that confidence and self-love that they become better husbands, they become better fathers, better stewards of the community, better team members at work. And ultimately, through the ground up grassroots effort, we're going to make the world a better place. So Beard Brand wants to make the world a better place, and that's what our mission is. And then in addition to that, it's funny, in this space, there is a lot of, you know, quote unquote, hyper masculinity, where it's questioning men if they're a man or not, if they have a beard. Like, we avoid that type of marketing. We avoid the sexualization of both men and women. So we're not posting like a bunch of like half naked women touching men's beards. And that's very easy marketing that is effective in the space. We tend to avoid it.
Of course, looked at your website and I went through it before our interview, and I was really struck by, I don't know if wholesome is the right word. There was not any sexualization. They all just looked normal. They weren't hyper masculine. They weren't surrounded by sexy women. Like, when I think about an industry I would consider very masculine, the auto industry. And whenever I see car advertisements, sexy women everywhere, men who have giant muscles, can't see me, but I'm like moving my hands out. Signify the big muscles. I know that's not how much. I know. Okay, I should have done that. Yeah, it's like the big muscles. Well, I just mean in terms of their chest. Their chests are so big. Anyway, point is, if I were looking at your site, it's a site I would feel comfortable showing my grandpa. I wouldn't get embarrassed about it. Did that happen organically, or was that something you did purposely?
No, I'd say that was intentional. And we know it comes with trade-offs and consequences, and we're okay with that.
What are the trade-offs and consequences of being a wholesome brand that respects women?
It has less virility, you know, like you tend to be more polite and more, I don't want to say nice. I had this conversation with my daughter, like, I'm not a nice guy. I don't describe myself as a nice guy. I would say I can be nice, but the brand is, I wouldn't even describe it as wholesome, more as inspirational or aspirational is how we want to be. I do think there is a lot of ways to create advertisements that get people to stop scrolling because you flash eye candy in front of them. And guys are, as much as we don't want to admit it, we're simple creatures. Those things do work.
So, I want to set the stage for my listeners. How would you define masculinity? And why does it seem like masculinity is always tied up into the hypersexualization of women and, you know, like having the big muscles and walking around like, oh, look at me. I'm a tall man with a giant watch. Why is that?
Yeah, I was worried if my watch was big enough. Because I am a tall man with a medium-sized watch, I'd say. This is a giant watch? Okay, well, I am a giant man with a giant watch. You know, masculinity, I was thinking about this question beforehand, and I think there's a lot of pressure for men to behave a certain way and to do certain things. Like, for instance, you can't sew, cook at home, or you know, like whatever the traditional gender norms are. Like, these are all the things that you should do or not do. But at the end of the day, how I define masculinity is like how to be a man and like what does being a man represent? And I think the execution can be done in a lot of different ways. And those executions can be different from man to man. You know, like my do's are going to be different than other do's, but my house should be the same. Like being a pillar of strength, being like a calming environment and being someone also willing to take risks, I think are very inherently masculinity things. I really want to like, I want to preface everything we're going to talk about with the understanding that I like to look at people as individuals. I know these are all going to feel like tropes or whatever, but we are all individuals. And whether or not you define yourself closer to traditional masculine roles or traditional feminine roles, I think that's okay. Like everyone's on their own journey. And to a certain degree, I think people know what they need to do to improve and embark on a pathway of growth.
I think masculinity is just hard to define. I feel like you gave a pretty good idea of how you see it, but it is a term that I feel like shifts in a way that femininity does not. When you think about being traditionally feminine, it's very, you know, you're nurturing, you take care of your physical appearance, you're generous, you are kind. And when taken too far, it can mean things like, oh, you don't stand up for yourself, or you let people tell you what to do. What happens when masculinity is taken too far? What does that look like?
Strength, for instance, I feel like is a masculine term. And strength can be demonstrated in a lot of different ways. But at the physical element of it, like men are inherently physically stronger than women.
I grew up with brothers, Eric. You don't have to tell me that.
I know it's crazy that's almost controversial to say. I think it's inherently true. I do believe that men and women are different. I think there are different elements that drive us. And with the far extremes of that physical strength, you do have physical violence in ways that are clearly evident. Men end up in jail more often. Men are more violent. That would, I would say, is like the biggest red flag in terms of masculinity is the violence. I think men also tend to be more driven to solve problems through logic rather than feelings. not in all cases, but I think that drives men to be a little more distant. I hear about how women have such strong bonds with their friends, and men, our bonds are solving problems together. It's like, how do we solve problems? But I don't know anything. Like, I don't know my friends' names or their kids' names. I don't know their birthdays. And they don't know mine, and that's fine. They don't know how old my kids are. So I do think there is that element of coldness that you get in masculinity where we don't have that same emotional bond and connection.
That's a little shocking, quite honestly.
We don't have those emotions to be upset about it. It's just fine. It's just how we are. There's certainly some men who are probably more emotional than others. But I think for the most part, men are completely okay not feeling as much. Not feeling as much, for lack of better terms.
So being a woman and my experience with femininity, no one cares if I do masculine things. No one thinks about it. No one ever teases me about it. Same is not true for men who exhibit feminine behaviors, especially when they are in their teenage years or college. Why do you think that is?
You know, I don't know what it's like to be a woman. I've heard sometimes women tend to talk behind your back. Is that true?
Is that true? Yes. Yeah, it happens all the time. As an adult, I have really worked hard to stay away from that. That is the rule I've just taken with everything, including if I like send someone a DM on Twitter, I write it with the understanding that it might be seen by 100 people.
So I think that goes back to answering the question. You talk about women are allowed to take on masculine roles because they're not experiencing it directly. No one's making fun of them. But does that happen behind the scenes? Or do you inherently feel that self-pressure that, oh, they might be talking about me behind my scenes if I wear pants or, you know, whatever masculine thing is out there?
Actually, I would say something I've noticed is that women tend to be just, this is just something I've noticed. I don't know if it's true or not. This is just anecdotal. Women are meanest when they want something else another woman has. So one of my friends got married recently. Her husband is so good looking. Her daughter is gorgeous. Her husband is gorgeous. She is the nicest person I feel like I've met in my life. Sometimes when my other friends would meet her, they would talk to me after. They'd be like, oh, I don't like this girl because of this and this and this. And I was like, I don't see that at all. I don't know if you don't like her or if you're just jealous of her. When I see or experience girls gossiping, it tends to be related to someone being too feminine or too successful in feminine metrics. I don't really ever hear girls go, oh, this girl is such a tomboy. It's more like when a girl gets too much male attention or is too attractive. That is when I see girls be the meanest.
So I think that goes back to the point about being a tomboy is like, if women tend to go towards masculine traits, that may make them less desirable to men. And because they're less desirable to men, they don't mind you voluntarily taking yourself out of the pool, for lack of better terms. Men, I think, are okay with conflict. To a certain degree, I want to say we're okay with conflict, but we embrace conflict probably at a higher level than women. I think it's really challenging to be a woman in today's environment. It's a weird time where we've seen women get more and more and more equality in traditional masculine roles to the point where women now have this expectation that their identity needs to be tied to what they do rather than tied to the family they build. And I think that shift has created burden for women who have this choice. Do I go down the career path or do I go down the family path? And, or do I try to have it all? And I think for the women who try to have it all, it's got to be incredibly stressful because let's be real, you can't have it all. There are trade-offs in life, and no one has that endless amount of energy to be able to have a full-time 40-hour work job and then to have the energy reserves to serve your family and raise your children. I think that's a horrible thing. So I think women do tend to be more agreeable than men, and it's like this desire to want to please society and be great in the career and be great at home has set them up for failure, and we see it with anxiety rates going through the roof.
Yeah, this is a very interesting discussion I would love to have with you. The only thing I'll say about it is some women don't have a choice in terms of whether or not they're going to have a career. It's like being able to pick or say, oh, I can have it all. It's such a luxury that I think a lot of people don't fully appreciate. If you're a single mom, you don't have that choice. Why do you think people see women who do it all so negatively? Like, why do you think that is?
I don't think people see it negatively. So in my mind, I think the ideal family unit, if I had a magic wand and I could give this to everybody, would be a loving couple who complement each other. The way I think of it is from a business perspective, there's this visionary integrator. Basically, there's going to be the visionary, and this is going to be the person who you rely on their career. You rely on where they want to take the family. And then there's going to be the integrator. And the integrator is the person who executes and makes sure that everything gets done. So they're going to be the person working inside the family, raising the children, making sure that everyone's eating healthy meals. And when you split these burdens up between two different people, you don't have the same conflict that you're going to have where you have situations where both people are working, both people are trying to raise the kids. You know, who's doing what? Everyone's stepping on everyone's toes. I don't like the way you do this. I don't like the way you do that. And there's a lot of conflict. I think if we can try to build or encourage people to go towards, I call it the power couple, where you split up the roles. And it doesn't have to be men do the visionary and women do the executor. My sister is the breadwinner in her relationship, and her husband stays at home and raises the kids. So I don't think it has to be one or the other. But I do think in looking for a partner, if you're single right now, think about that. Whose career do you want to follow? Who has the most opportunity? And then how can we build this in a way that allows us to optimize our family and set the children up to be really at an advantage for the next generation?
Thanks for giving the example of your sister. I feel like everyone in your family is a visionary. That doesn't surprise me. How can men become good visionaries? What are steps they can take to becoming better leaders?
I would say the answer is you don't need to become a visionary. I think that the answer is like you need to understand who you are and build a life that allows you to be your individual self and thrive. And understanding that that has limitations. I very much identify as a visionary, as a creative. I need to lean into being myself. And I think that's important where you figure out what are my strong suits, what are my weaknesses, and not lift my weaknesses up, but find people around me who are great at where I'm not great.
I really like that. I have to ask, so in case, you know, my listeners don't know what you look like, Eric presents as very traditionally masculine. Tall man with a giant watch, very tall, very broad-shouldered, great facial hair, great head of hair. How much do you feel like that has impacted who you've chosen to become as a man and as a leader?
I do feel very fortunate. I'm 6'5". I'm very privileged to have the childhood that I have. I have two loving parents who put me in a wonderful environment where my only expectation in life was success. I do feel at certain points of time that this has allowed me to have the confidence to embark on things that maybe people would be too timid or afraid of failing, because I know that I can lift myself back up. I've failed enough times and gotten up from them that if I didn't have maybe insecurities. But I say this, there's plenty of jobs that I wanted that I didn't get. You know, there's plenty of times that I was on the sports teams and lost that I wish I won. There's plenty of athletes who are better than me. The funny thing about this current feeling of masculinity and really of my belief that white men are target number one in a lot of circles as the enemy is that as much as white men are, you know, quote unquote, oppressing others, they're also oppressing other white men and other men. And it is challenging. It is hard. There are men who are beating men. You're telling them that not only are they the oppressor, but they're also losing. That doesn't really create a good environment, in my opinion.
How do you feel about the fact that you can be people's punching bag? You know, people can make fun of you for being a tall white man. And I would say there's not really much you can do about it. What are you going to say? Like, oh, yeah, I'm technically set up for success in corporate America. You're right. I am going to get paid more because of my physical appearance. If I walk into a room, people generally will make more space for me. What do you think about that?
I don't want to race to win the victim games. And I know, like, you know, white men are punching bags right now. I don't perceive us to be victims, just like I don't perceive any class of person to be victims. I think everyone has the ability to create an amazing, beautiful life. And I also recognize that for every single person, life is very challenging. Everyone gets presented issues and battles that they didn't know they could face. And for people out there who are facing very dark battles, I'm going to tell you as a reminder, you are facing these battles because you will have that power, and a lesser person would not be able to handle the adversity that you're currently going through.
Very interesting. And what you just said makes me wonder, what are you teaching your son about what it means to be a man? And is that something you're actively thinking about?
As a father, at the end of the day, you need to show your children stuff. And it's what you show your children as to what they is going to think is normal. So treat my wife, Anne, with respect and communicate clearly. Not to say we don't have arguments or things get heated from time to time. Not to say we don't have disagreements. If anything, you want to have disagreements with your spouse so that your kids can see how you overcome those. You know, I work out in my garage, so they see me working out. I don't tell them to work out.
Okay. I know it's very serious when we're talking about masculinity, the masculinity crisis. I just have a very funny image of you in like 80s workout clothes with really intense music. Is that what it's like? Do you put on a show for your kids?
I do have a Henley crop top. I've got some pretty wild sweatpants as well, floral pattern sweatpants and Roka sunglasses that are pretty rad. So it is, to a certain degree, it's kind of like that. So I have a home garage. We do barbell stuff. And then this morning, my daughter comes out of a rowing machine. We'll get her on the rowing machine. And my daughter is pumping iron. She was doing the bench press this morning. And I don't force him on to do that. But she's 10. My son is 4. And then my son, he'll come out and he'll just see it. And he'll be like, hey, can you count my reps or something like that? Get them involved in the things that are important and then take them out on hikes, take them on walks. We're going to start running around. To answer your original question about my son is I want him to see all these things and understand these things. But I do want to give him some secrets as to the things that took me a really long time to learn, like how to pick up a girl. Maybe it's going to be slightly different in 10 years, but I think there are instinctual things that he can do to understand women a little bit better and understand how he can show his value to them a little bit better. And my daughter too, you know, there's so much messaging right now about, you know, women are strong and women are the future and women are powerful. And I think it's great that she's hearing those things, but I also want to give her messaging that it's okay if she wants to be the leader of the family and to take that time and energy to think about how she can raise the next generation and what that will look like. I don't want to say like, this is how you do it, but these are the opportunities to you and whatever you choose, I'm going to love you and support you no matter what.
Yeah, you sound like an amazing father. I'm not just saying that because you're sitting across from me and obviously want you to like me for the interview. You do seem like a really great dad. So I have a few follow-up questions on this. What do you think happens when children don't have strong male role models in their life? What happens to them?
So I want to say I'm not an amazing father.
An amazing father is a father who sticks around and takes care of their children and tries to raise them in the best way he can. I think you're an amazing dad.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. I certainly have opportunities to improve as a father. And I think that's maybe the burden that I wear. If you ask my children, they're not going to say I'm great, which is, you know, is not nice to hear. I am the lawmaker of the family as well, or the law enforcer of the family. So when people are breaking the rules or, you know, pushing the limits or not communicating with respect, I'm the one that comes in, and that doesn't always build friendships with the children. I think when they're older, they'll recognize those things. But at their current age, sometimes I am the bad guy.
So I used to volunteer at a domestic violence shelter quite a lot. I know I've done a lot of work in that space. Not going to go into it, but there's a term I've heard thrown around quite a lot, which is Disney dad. Disney dad, it's like if a mom is taking care of children and the father is separated, whenever he comes and visits the kid, he shows them a super fun time. They go to Disneyland, literally or figuratively, and he's just a blast and the kids love him and they resent the mom for making them eat vegetables. It's like, oh, I gotta go to my dad's house and eat ice cream for breakfast. And that's not a good father. That's being fun for your kids all the time. I think that actually kind of makes you a bad dad, a bad parent. I think being a lawmaker, setting rules for your kids, it's hard now, but I'm sure they'll appreciate it when they get older.
You know, my wife and I are quite a bit different. So she tends to be very agreeable and she is the preferred parent. So she also has to wear that burden where they always come to her. And it's very much exhausting. I can understand how exhausting it is. I see, you know, like, because conflict is okay for me. I don't mind going to battle with my kids over something that I believe will hold them accountable or make sure that they are held to a high standard. So I think what's nice about our family is that my wife is so caring and nurturing and kind and more agreeable that they have an outlet for both if they need it. So I agree with you. Obviously, I'm doing the things that I think are the best, but it's challenging in today's environment to be a dad because you hear there's this peaceful parenting idea that you communicate through empathy. And then, you know, I think at the far end of it, there's a militant father that's my way or the highway. And then I feel like there's me who desires this empathetic style of communication. And then there's my inherent nature, which is just conflict and going to battle and putting my foot down. This internal battle is really challenging because we hear so many different ways of how to be a good parent. And I want to be a good parent, but I just don't know at the end of the day, which is the best technique. At the end of the day, you just have to give love and they have to know they have love and they have that foundation of love. You do the best that you can with your energy levels and your abilities. So it's not easy and I don't want to judge anyone for the choices they've made with how they choose to parent their children.
Are you familiar with the three types of parenting styles?
I know of adaptive parenting and then, like, you know, fair parenting are two that I'm aware of. Is that what you're talking about?
In the field of developmental psychology, there are three parenting styles that people traditionally fall under. Your authoritarian, which is military, my way or the highway, kid comes 15 minutes late, they lose all their privileges, that kind of very strict, very hardline. People call it abusive sometimes. I don't know how I feel about that, but that's that kind of parenting. There's the type of parenting I think we see a lot of now. I think a lot of millennials had authoritarian parents and they've become permissive parents. Permissive is like, oh, your kid wants ice cream for breakfast. They don't want to go to school. It's basically like letting your kids not have consequences. So they spill something, either they don't have to clean it up or you clean it up for them. You see this a lot. Like, I don't have kids and I don't know how hard it is to be a parent, but like, God, I just see some kids sometimes walking around with these phones. Their faces are glued to them. They throw something on their ground and don't pick it up. That's permissive parenting. Might be a little hot. I'm not a fan of it. The third kind is the gold standard for parenting. It's called authoritarian parenting. You're kind to your kids, but if they do something bad and you have to punish them, if they steal something or don't study for a test, it's like you let them face the consequences for it. You don't make them too hard, you make them fair.
The reality of this is probably a blend of all three. I have this rule, you put your dishes away after dinner, and there's plenty of times where there's still dishes, and it's like, well, do I want to get to battle with this? And my instinct is like, I would go to battle all the time, but I also know my wife gets mad at me if I go to battle all the time. So it's like, I do sit in the middle and you do have to just kind of feel things out. And then at the end of the day, I don't think it really matters. It's like training your dog. You can have this golden retriever that you train all the time, sits where it's supposed to sit. It's perfectly well behaved. It does everything perfectly. But to me, it loses a bit of its soul. It's not who it really is. The dog needs to jump up on the couch from time to time, or it needs to eat a stick of butter on the countertop from time to time. Not all the time, but it needs to have a little bit of that freedom and that little bit of independence. And that, because I don't want to create robots. I want my son and daughter to create their own life. I don't want them to be mini me's. And I want them to feel confident that they can do that. I don't want their decision process to be like, well, dad's going to get mad at me. So I better not do it. It needs to be like, I'm doing this because this is who I am. Yeah, it's tough. It's certainly tough.
Honestly, I think one of the signs that someone is a good parent is that if you tell them they're a good parent, they'll respond with, no, everybody makes mistakes. Because it's true. When you're a father, you're not a Stepford wife. You're not like a perfect little dad robot, perfect little freaky robot children. Just wanted to say that. What happens when children don't have strong male role models in their life?
Yeah, finally getting to this question. I think there are men who are able to overcome this, but if you look at the data and the statistics, people growing up without fathers, they're not set up for success. Let's just call that out bluntly. I'm curious, we've been talking about fatherhood so much. What has been your experience with fatherhood and your relationship with your dad?
Eric and I are interviewing in the Beard Brand office. It is 1:30. It is way too early to have alcohol to bring a drink. But I did bring, of course, I brought coffee. One second. So I am pretty comfortable sharing this. Obviously, I try to avoid sharing personal stuff about myself just because I don't want people to feel like they know me through my podcast. But there's stuff about this on the internet. And all right, to make a long story short, when I was 3 years old, my dad walked out on my family while my mom was pregnant with... No, I don't have a good relationship with my dad. If you are a girl and you have a good male role model in your life, you are a lot less likely to be in relationships where you are hit or called names. If someone does not have a good male role model in their life, what can they do to ensure that they are not in abusive relationships and that they pick partners who are going to be good men?
You know, it's challenging where if like you did not grow up in an environment where you know what a healthy father should be and subsequently what your husband should be. How do you find that? How do you know what you don't know? I think you're in a tough spot because I think there's a lot of men who are manipulative and they know all the things that present nice, potential, great father type of person. And then once the doors close, what is that person like and how do they communicate? I personally would generally want to give people the benefit of the doubt one time is fine and let them know that this is a boundary you don't cross, because maybe they just communicate in a way, not intentionally, just how they are raised. They don't intend to be, you know, abusive or whatever, and they have opportunity to improve it by having it called out. Because there's a lot of times where in my youth, I think I did things that nowadays I don't do. And it's just part of growth. And, you know, I behaved in ways that I shouldn't have behaved in the past. And that's part of growth.
I don't think hitting a woman or calling a woman a bitch is something you've ever done. Could be wrong.
I've never hit a woman. I've never spanked my kids. Have I ever called my wife any names? I don't think so. I try to focus on tasks. And I try to do this with my kids too. It's like their execution, not who they are. So it's, did they do a good job at school? You know, like what was their inputs? Focus on their inputs and then criticize those. Because there are opportunities to improve. It's like, okay, we could have spent more time practicing volleyball and we would have had a better outcome. So that was not a good input. You skipped this practice. You didn't eat right. You didn't sleep right. Those are things that you need to improve. So finding people who do communicate that way would be a major, is a green flag. Is that what they call it?
Yeah, green flag. Go green.
In our family, like I do lead the family in the sense that, of course, my wife is involved in the decisions we're making, how we're making them. But it's like when we wanted to move to Austin, it was like, we're moving to Austin and we're going to figure it out. You know, so with relationships, there's always at what hand does it become like, unless both parties are initiating it, the same idea, is there this influence? If there's a power dynamic, is it no longer consensual? And does that extend all the way to family relationships where, because I have a career and a job, like we follow my career, is that a power dynamic between me and my wife? And is that no longer consensual? I go down these rabbit holes where I think through and I walk through everything in my mind with today's society expectations, and it gets confusing. It gets confusing.
Having a strong male presence in your life, it doesn't have to be a dad. It could be like your great male teacher. That is the biggest deflector of being in any kind of abusive relationship for women. There are probably a myriad of reasons for that. But I just have to wonder if it's like, if a girl has a really strong dad, I feel like guys are going to be kind of intimidated by him and be less likely to pursue abusing her, which you don't have to answer this. It's okay if you don't want to talk about it. But let's say your daughter gets into a relationship that's abusive in some way. It could be physical, it could be financial, it could be emotional. What would you do, and what would you recommend other fathers do?
Violence is usually not a solution that I think of. At the end of the day, with my daughter, I would want to help coach her out of it and provide a scenario where she can come at home and be safe. And then if she wanted to get out of it. But at the end of the day, she's also her own person, and I can't stop her from going from abusive relationship to abusive relationship. So if she's in this and she doesn't want to get out of it, I can't help her. You know, she has to want to help herself. So if she wants to help herself, yeah, open up my door, come in there. If that guy tries to come over to my house and break into my house or whatever, then he will see consequences to those actions. So she has a safe place, and I'll help her with any kind of, you know, if she needs money to get out, she needs to leave the country, whatever, all those things, support her. But I'm not going to go out and attack the guy.
Very interesting. You were pretty strict on saying, I'm not a violent person. You mentioned earlier you don't spank your kids. I have to ask, why is violence so tied to masculinity? And do you think it is inherently masculine?
Yeah, I mean, I think men are inherently physical. I don't think they're inherently violent.
Just for my listeners, I would describe Eric as a gentle giant. You don't seem violent in any way. You're traditionally masculine. You don't strike me as someone who's done that.
I have a low tolerance for that. I can say things like, again, I have conflict tolerance. So I will say things that are unpopular, or I will push the limits of language. And I've never seen it where saying something resulted in physical violence.
I don't know if it's rare, but I would say you're someone who presents strong masculinity without veering into toxic masculinity. I hear that term thrown around a lot. What is toxic masculinity? How would you define it?
Too much physicality, too much quote-unquote hyper-masculinity, where you're creating caricatures of what a man is. I think that doesn't serve any good. Men are problem solvers. When taken to the extreme, you get immoral solutions. And I think that maybe that could be described as a toxic masculinity. I think to a certain degree, people need to push others out of their comfort level. That is something that is healthy that can be perceived as not healthy. Like for instance, Travis with Uber had a lot of flaws. He was not someone who I would personally mimic, but because he had this ability to force his way through effectively ignoring local regulations to allow Uber is like why we have Uber today. And this desire to disregard the laws, to break the rules and the laws, allowed for a great product and service that is a benefit to society. And he had to do this because the laws that were created to keep out competition. So men like that are effectively displaying a type of toxic masculinity. And he's an asshole. He's a terrible individual. Eventually run out of the business. But it was like that type of asshole allowed him to create it. So it's like he has this toxic masculinity that allows him, when applied in the right way, to create something of beauty, but also comes with trade-offs.
Very interesting. There are quite literally a million things I could ask you about toxic masculinity. But honestly, I feel like that subject is so tired. Everybody talks about it. Everyone goes on about it. I want to talk about something else. What age does a boy become a man?
Once you get off your parents' phone plan, then you're probably an adult. I think it is dependent on the individual. To me, I view being a man as being able to not just support yourself, but to support others. I think, unfortunately, in today's society, it seems like that is like 25 or like 28. Boys are getting out on their own. I think 100 years ago, it would have been like 13 or 14. And you see it with the Amish communities and how they're able to teach them through age 14 and then let them start acting as an adult. I feel like kids today, boys and girls, they're afraid and they're playing it safe and they're coddled and they're not willing to go out. But so for me, that was 21. I got married at 24.
What are some things women can look for to decide if someone is going to be a good husband and a father?
Okay. It's going to be hard. I mean, my wife and I certainly have our challenges. We went through really a decade of blackness in dealing with infertility. We have something like 10 lost pregnancies and then tens of thousands of dollars in IVF treatments and things like that. That was a very challenging time for us. We implemented in our family a tagline for the Banholtzes, and it's Banholtzes never give up. I think of that in both my relationship with my wife and then my relationship with my children and my relationship with my career. The things that I say I'm going to do, and it's not always easy. And this is something that I don't think a lot of men, and probably women too, are willing to think about is like, are you willing to have a bad week with your partner knowing that you can resolve that problem and have a long, healthy relationship? Most people would say, yeah. Are you willing to have a bad month? You know, if you just started dating, probably not. But if you've been married for a while, yeah, a bad month, no big deal. A bad year, you know, would you be willing to have a bad year? Would you be willing to have a bad decade? And then what is the extent of suffering that you can do knowing that you'll eventually be able to overcome and resolve and work through the challenges that you're having to bring it back to what you know was possible with your relationship? So those are things that I remind myself as things get dark is like, one, you know, nothing is permanent. This challenging time in your life, it will end. You will work through it. You know, the kids will grow up. They will leave the house. All this will end. So can you work through it knowing that there is going to be sunnier days? You'll have challenging times in the future and you will have darkness. And like, can you focus on the now to really appreciate the beauty that you have? It's something that I try to remind myself as well.
Yeah, that brings me back to something I said earlier when I said you're really a great dad. You're like, you know, I'm not perfect. You're sticking around. You're there for your kids. For as long as you are living, you're going to be there for your kids. Why is that?
I think for me, it's like I have been through a lot, you know, with the infertility. We have been through so much. It is just a reminder that things change. You're going to have moments where it's just not as good. I recognize that maybe I'm in one of those moments. And then when you have the energy or the time or the passion, or you try to create that time or energy or passion to rekindle and rebuild and improve and level up. This year has been great for me with my relationship with my daughter because it's always been an antagonizing relationship between me and her. We're both strong-willed people and we battle a lot. And my wife is very agreeable, so she is very accommodating. And then I'll see that and it builds up for me. And then it's like, I really got to battle because my wife's not going to battle. So I really amp it up quite a bit. So we've not always been eye to eye, but past like year, she's gotten into sports. She's gotten into working out with me. We play volleyball afterwards. I'll drive her to school and back and stuff like that, or drive her to her friends and back. And those have been times for us to reconnect. So it feels like we're finally, you know, after 10 years, starting to build a stronger relationship and connection together. And hopefully, you know, by the time she's ready to go out on her own, she'll look at our relationship fondly and see me as a pillar of support as she faces adversity in her life.
Speaking about growing up, how do you feel about Peter Pan syndrome? And why do you feel like there are so many men in their 30s and even 40s who are just clinging on to boyhood?
With women becoming more empowered and taking over a lot of some of the roles, I want to say taking over, but joining men in some roles, maybe that has eased the burden to men to feel like they need to provide. I think if we look back 100 years ago, and if the expectation is that a man needs to provide for the family and for his wife and for his children, he has to get his shit together because that's hard. That's really hard to do, to provide for 5 or 6 mouths to feed. Now, if all he has to do is care for himself, and then, you know, he can meet women who plan to care for themselves too, he doesn't have this expectation in his mind to provide. This idea that men are providers has been taken away from them to a certain degree. I think there's still plenty of men out there who view themselves as providers and they want to provide. And those are probably the men who get married at 24 and they start a family and they work hard to provide for their family. I know those men exist. I see them a lot and they exist with my friends.
Do you feel like feminism has created weaker men? I see this as someone who is very grateful for feminism. Specifically because of what I mentioned earlier, I am so glad that I have the ability to earn my own money and I don't have to settle for... Which, like, if you look at the times you're talking about where men are providers, yes, there are a lot of great men, there are a lot of good providers, but there are also a lot of men who hit their wives. There are, like, commercials about it, right? There's that coffee commercial where it's like, make good coffee for your husband or he'll hit you. And it's like a thing. It was just very commonplace.
You make me feel very unwifely, McNaughton. Go barbecue.
I still say don't serve your awful coffee with my steaks.
Oh, Mrs. Olson, he's always crabbing about my coffee. I could cry.
This must have been such a nice vacation. Did you ever see Larry looking so happy?
Oh, honey, happiness is a vacation. Away from your coffee. This coffee is criminal.
Honey, you killed the petunias.
Then you admit it. Your coffee really is murder.
Papa Eddie, my coffee, it's murder. It's either too bitter or too weak.
Try Folgers. Because Folgers coffee is mountain grown.
Mountain grown?
Like the sign says, mountain grown for richer flavor.
You know, it's a crime not to have delicious coffee like this all the time.
We will, now that I've discovered the mountains. Ooh.
Folgers coffee, mountain grown for richer flavor.
So what do you think about that? Do you think the modern movement, how would you rate it on a scale of good to bad? The modern movement of women working and maybe taking on more traditionally masculine roles.
You know, it's hard for me to say one period of time was better or worse if I wasn't alive. It is easy to see things that were, for lack of better terms, like cherry pick, because we're not seeing everything that the people saw 100 years ago or 50 years ago or whatever. And we're recanting people's memories of things rather than, you know, the reality of things. I think it's great that women are able to leave abusive relationships. I think it's great that men are able to leave abusive relationships. I think it's important for people to have boundaries and for them to set it. You know, this idea that divorce would not be socially acceptable and you would have to stay in an abusive relationship sounds terrible. It sounds absolutely horrible. Now, the question is feminism good for society? It comes down to how you define feminism and what you view feminism as. I think men and women have to work in harmony together. I think men have to view women as amazing people that bring tons of value to the world. And I think women need to look at men the same way. Their strengths and how we are different, how men and women are different, and how we use those differences to create a culture of amazement.
You know, I have to ask, wondering, when you look at men in their 30s and 40s and even 50s who are clinging on to boyhood, personally, what do you feel? How do you see them? What happens in your body? What do you think?
Yeah, I have a very low tolerance for incompetence in my life. I was on the rowing team here in Austin, Texas, and there is a team member who is notorious for signing up for practices and not showing up. That's not a big deal if it's just you and your bros hanging out at the gym, but in rowing, you have assigned seats and you need that seat filled to be able to take the boat out. So if that person doesn't show up, then you don't get to go out on the water and row. That person would drive me insane. It would just absolutely drive me insane. If it's up to me and I'm rowing the program, that person's off the program. I block those type of people out of my life. I have no tolerance for that. So when you experience it, you experience this with men in their 30s, 40s, 50s who are acting like boys. I don't experience it at all.
I just want to be clear for everyone listening. I do not experience anything with men in their 40s and 50s. Thank you.
Well, I'm in my 40s. We're having a podcast together. So like my experience is from like just interaction. I do not interact with incompetent people. So you say you're going to do something, you do it. And then in my life, I have a boundary. If you're incompetent, you just get less of my time.
So what does it mean to be a good man other than not being violent and showing up on time, trying to be competent in whatever field they're in? How can men maintain and better themselves?
Well, shameless plug, go to Beard Brand and buy some products. But I mean, seriously, like, I think there's a lot of ways to be a good man. How I view my world is like, I will do what I'll say I'll do. I will do things that make me feel uncomfortable and push myself to grow. I think growth is vital for human happiness. I think work is vital for human happiness. I think humans have to work, just like we have to eat and drink and sleep and have love in our lives. We have to work. So someone who strives to work. And then I think it's, you know, I fall into the more traditional gender norm. So being able to control our emotions, I think, is an important thing. I think being strong and stable, knowing that you can be depended on. And then I think also being willing to say uncomfortable things, whether that be humor and jokes, whether it be, you know, fighting against whatever current societal vibes are going on and standing up against the crowd. I think that is an important thing to do. And then I think, should you open doors or not open doors or pay for the meals on the first day? I think all of that stuff is not the thing that you need to worry about. It's like, how do I treat people well? And if you want to steal something from me, leave the world a better place than when you entered it. Think about that. How can you make the world around you better? You do that, and that is a great sign of masculinity.
How do you feel about men who cry?
I think it depends on how they cry.
Is there a masculine way to cry?
Yeah, absolutely. What's funny is like if you ever fly a lot, the altitude change totally messes with your emotions. Like I'll watch some sappy movie on an airplane and then like tears will just start rolling down. It's kind of weird how that happens. But I think at the end of the day, it's about like, are you in control of your emotions or are you not? Can you cry but still like not be hysterical? I think is fine. But I think if you're hysterical and losing it, I don't think those are quite masculine things. I think it's ingrained in who we are as men. It's funny watching my daughter and my son, and of course, these are data points of two, but my boy would fall. We have a household that's not, we never say don't cry, but he just gets mad. Like if you ask him if he's okay, he'll fall, smack himself, and we'll be like, oh man, are you okay? And he's like, don't ask me that. And I don't know if it's because he watches me and I tend not to be a very emotional guy or if that's just how he is. But I do think to a certain degree, maintaining composure is a masculine trait. And whether or not tears come out, I don't think it makes a big difference.
Very interesting that you mentioned a change in your physical state as being a reason for crying or hurting yourself. You're talking about tears that result from physical pain. If you get hurt, it's literally how your body releases pain. Crying when it comes to something physical that happens to you is normal. If you see a guy break his leg and he starts crying because of it, no one is going to say, oh, that guy is feminine. It's like, you just broke your leg. Of course you're crying. You fly up high in the air, the altitude changes, tears come out of your eyes. No one's going to go, oh, that guy is not masculine because he broke his leg or is high up in the air and things are changing. Or, you know, people have tears when they eat spicy food. That happens. What about emotional pain? What about when you get dumped and you're heartbroken because of it? How do you feel about guys who cry because of that? And have you ever done that, like in your life? And how do you feel about yourself when that happens?
Yeah, I mean, I tear up a fair amount. You know, of course, when my dog died, that gets the waterworks going.
That's a serious event. I mean, if you watch a sad movie, okay, I admit I'm a big crier. I'm a very emotional, very sensitive person. Not necessarily proud of it, but I cry a lot. Cry when I see something beautiful or something sad, and I don't really care. I'm not ashamed. What about when watching a sad commercial when it's like imaginary emotional pain?
I mean, I think to a certain degree, men, our emotions tend to be more neutered. So we may feel it, but we don't feel it the same way that women feel it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to judge anyone if they cry or not, but I do judge people if they cry all the time and they're a dude.
Oh, good. You said and you're a dude. I was going to be like, are you judging me? I'm a massive crybaby, Eric.
I think it's okay for women to cry. I think that's socially acceptable. And I do think it's okay for men to cry in the right scenario, but I don't think it's okay for them to cry all the time, frankly.
So crying is something that you would see as not traditionally masculine in the way we're talking about removing crying that happens from physical pain. Of course, people are going to cry when their leg gets broken. What are other behaviors that you would think of as not masculine? I mean, I feel like things change, right? In the 80s, if you were drinking mineral water, you were thought of as gay. Have you seen the movie Heathers? There's a scene in Heathers where, Heathers is a great movie, there's a scene where, long story short, the two main characters are trying to make it seem like two other characters are gay, and they put a bunch of stuff in the box, and when the police come and find it, they throw out pornography magazines, they throw out very obvious men into men things, they find mineral water, and they're like, these guys were gay. Like, that's how coded it was, that if you were drinking mineral water, you liked men. Being gay doesn't mean you're not masculine. I'm just talking about the 80s. What are things you think of as not masculine?
I don't want to sound like a broken record because I feel like it's a lot of the same thing. So it's the antithesis of being masculine, right? So if you're not strong, if you're wavering, if you are a flake. But it's weird because it's like those don't mean you're feminine, right? So what is the question more of, like, what pushes you from masculinity to femininity? Or is it more like these are masculine traits and these are not masculine traits?
I would say you've done an excellent job at explaining what masculinity is and what it means. I just mean things that are more surface level. So wearing pink, ballet, mineral water. Are there any things you look at, and whether you like it or not, whether it's something you want to work on or not, are there things you would look at and you'd go, that's really feminine. I wouldn't do that. And I probably wouldn't want my son to do that either.
Yeah, I mean, wearing dresses, I think. I'm serious. Like, my boy was actually in a dress yesterday, and I was a little grumpy about it. Actually, pretending to be a woman, I think, is not very masculine, or actions that would define you as masculine. But besides that, like, I don't think there's, like, color. Like, I love the color pink. I think it's a cool color. If you sew, it doesn't mean you're a man or a woman. You know, like, if you cook, same thing. Like, I don't think that means you're a man or woman. If you clean up the house, I don't think that's a man or a woman kind of thing. What other things? Paying the bills. You know, like, maybe you just rattle off some tasks and I say, is it man or woman?
That's a fun game we should do. Let's do that at the end of our conversation. That's a good game closer. So talking about surface level attributes that represent masculinity, Eric, I have to say, I feel like hair is a big one. How do you feel like beards relate to masculinity? And what would you recommend to men who can't grow or lose their hair, you know, because of illness, age, or I don't know why else you would lose your hair, but I'm sure there's probably something else. Stress. Do you lose your beard because of stress?
Yeah. So this is a topic that I could go on about for a while. The reality is, for a guy, you either experience some type of hair loss or you die young. Every guy is going to experience some type of thinning of their hair. Male pattern baldness is really common in men, especially men with higher testosterone. It's not necessarily an absolute testosterone level, but it's how your body responds. So men who tend to have higher levels of testosterone will lose their hair. But in a twisted fate, those are also the people who grow the best beards. So Beard Brand customers tend to be probably over-index for hair loss and bald. We have a lot of customers who have hair loss and nice big burly beards. I'm a big fan of, you have to identify the problem, recognize how you want to deal with that problem, and feel confident in your decisions. Just like death, there are ways to slow down your death. You eat right, you exercise, you keep your stress levels. And the same can be said with hair loss. There are ways to slow down your hair loss. That's through finasteride, minoxidil, and keto. I think there's a lot of guys who experience hair loss and then insecurity comes through it. And they think about, how do I, you know, disguise this? They do the comb over, or how do they run from it rather than embrace it? Every guy, the challenge with hair loss and the challenge with your beard coming in is, this happens when you're an adult. I've got big ears. I've always had big ears. I grew up with big ears. It was a challenge at certain points in my life, but then because it was who I am, I no longer think about it. I no longer think about the color of my skin. I no longer think about my height. These are all attributes that who I am. But with your beard coming in, it doesn't happen until you're like 18, and your hair loss doesn't really start until you're like 22, something like that. You've already have this identity of who I am, and now it's changing. So you have to come to terms with, like, this is really who you are the whole time. You always had a patchy beard. You just never knew because it didn't start growing until you're 18. So in your mind, you imagine that you'd grow this big, thick, full beard, and it comes in patchy, so you have these insecurities. Same with hair loss. You always imagine you'd have have head hair, didn't realize that you're going to lose your hair, and you identified as someone with hair, but the reality is you weren't. So it's like, how do you come to terms with that transition where you find out the person you really are is not the person who you thought you were going to be? But to finally answer your question is, you grow what you got. So if you grow a good mustache and shave everything, you got good sideburns, grow those out. You got a good chin beard, maybe you have a goatee. You have thinning hair, then there are certain hairstyles that work good, like a buzz cut. You don't have to go completely bald. You can do a fade. So there's a lot of options out there to work with what you got, but you do have to take the time to invest and educate.
Eric does know a lot about beards. If I were a man, I would buy his products. He didn't tell me to say that. Got a great beard. We're going to play a fun game after, but I just want to, you know, I feel like the men who are listening to this will want to know, what facial hair gets the most ladies?
There have been scientific studies done that the most attractive facial hairstyle is the stubble to my length beard, which is about 2 weeks of beard. So a relatively short beard. But I would say the best beard to grow that will help you get the ladies is the one that allows you to be yourself so that you can attract the women that love you for who you are.
Beautiful and diplomatic answer. All right. One other final question. What sport would you recommend fathers play with their sons to encourage healthy masculinity? It's okay if there's more than one.
Swimming is a great sport from a young age. It helps you stay alive in case you fall in the pool. And it's fun. You can throw them around, you know, you can jump off the diving board. It's a great sport. So we'll go with that.
Thank you so much for coming on my show, Eric. It was very, very interesting.
Yeah, I've never passed around a microphone before for a podcast. So it was a lot of fun.
Thanks, everybody. Now Eric and I are going to play our Is This Masculine or Not game. Ballet.
Lame.
Men in dresses.
Lame.
Men in kilts.
Baller.
Oh my god, so my grandpa won't eat quiche because he says it's not masculine. Quiche.
Baller.
Times change. Mineral water.
Baller.
Mopeds.
Lame.
Having 1,000 throw pillows on a bed.
Mega lame.
Putting your cast iron skillet in the dishwasher.
Baller.
Baking.
Lame.
Really?
Yeah.
Even like sourdough bread?
Sourdough bread, I don't know if I would consider baking, but that's more like bread making. But if you want diplomatic answers, I'll give you diplomatic. But you're giving me a binary response, I'll give you a binary response.
Yeah, to be clear, Eric is a great person. I'm just teasing him. I think cupcakes and baking stuff, I do it. I wear a little flower apron. That's very feminine.
Not only that, you should be eating meats and vegetables and fruits. You shouldn't be baking stuff and eating all that. It's bad for you.
Mini Coopers.
Baller.
You know, when I was 13, my mom's friend had a Mini Cooper and she parked on a hill and she went inside to get something. And I was in the Mini Cooper and it literally started sliding down the hill because she didn't put the emergency brake on. And so I think Mini Coopers are lame because like a car sliding down a hill, that's a safety hazard. Going Dutch on the first date.
Lame.
Letting your significant other drive the car or be the main driver in the relationship.
Lame.
Eric is not a passenger princess. All right, last one. Long hair, specifically like cool California beachy blonde wavy surfer guy hair.
Baller.
I'd say that surprises me, but Eric runs a hair care business, so long. He says he's had long hair. All right, thanks everybody.
Love's been a game. Kept my options open, baby. Treated all girls the same. She's my garden seed. That was never so. Don't matter where we travel, baby. You are my home. Sometimes we get what we do not deserve. I got hurt. good to me. Oh, do I return the favor of love? Where do I learn, learn, learn? Talking about you like my future. Living in a terrible world. You're the dream I escaped to.